Hey, Trisha, how's it going?
All right, how are you?
Good, good. So, I'm actually very good. You know why? Because the other day I was reviewing a month-end close and I was reviewing a grant agreement. And I'm scrolling through and I noticed this section and it literally says something like conditional. Like it literally says the word accounting and then it has the word conditional. So I start reading through and it basically has language that says for accounting purposes, this grant is considered unconditional. Like it's basically addressing everything that we look for when we're doing revenue recognition and things like that and working with conditional contributions. I don't know. I just thought it was like somebody is finally meeting our needs, But I guess maybe to start, what exactly are we talking about when we talk about conditional contributions?
They are what I would almost call a gray area in nonprofit accounting, right? I mean, there's the clarifying standards came out in 2018. How much clarification there actually was, I still think we got a lot of gray area to work with, but I think we are moving more towards a place where we're really trying to get those nonprofit financial statements, nonprofit A, B, and C, to be kind of apples to apples versus sometimes we were looking at apples to oranges, right? So, conditional revenue, one, you have to have a right of return for any unspent funds or things that didn't meet the criteria for the purpose restrictions that might be also associated with it. Because remember, conditional revenue can also be purpose restricted. So I think that when we're looking at those types of items, then we're really looking at a place where, okay, we can say, number one, does it have this criteria, yes or no? And from there, then we can evaluate, is this truly conditional? Because sometimes there will still be a return of funds requirement, but it's not truly conditional in the way that the grant agreement is written, right? So we're really looking for barriers that have to be overcome that is related to the purpose of the agreement. That's the key point, right? So a lot of organizations in the past would say, well, I have to submit a narrative or a financial report in order to get the next round of funding. Based on the clarification that came out in 2018 on contributions for nonprofits, that's actually not considered to be related to the purpose, right? That's an administrative task. It's just a burden they have to bear as a part of the reporting process. So if that's the only condition, it's not truly a condition under these terms in the standards now. So you would actually deem that to be unconditional. When we're talking about conditions now, we're saying, all right, a grant is going to Meals on Wheels. And that grant agreement says you have to provide meals to 100 persons in the San Francisco Bay Area, right? That's a true condition. You have to meet that 100 meal criteria. It is measurable. That's one key part in order to actually recognize that as contribution revenue. So I think it's still a little bit of a gray area because sometimes what we consider to be measurable versus not measurable could kind of differ sometimes to some people.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, in general, in accounting, I mean, I suspect from the auditor's perspective, you're looking for the reasonableness of any assumptions made, right? So like, as long as there's no malintent behind assuming that, like, we don't think there are any real performance barriers, I think you're mostly looking for that because there's always going to be a little bit of subjectivity in that process.
Absolutely. And I think one of the other key things that we are looking for as auditors too is consistency. So that if you get a grant that is for a specific purpose and you consider that one to be conditional for some reason, and yes, we say it's reasonable, but then you get a similar written grant and you're saying that one's not conditional. But again, when we look at the language, it's very similar. We might question that a little bit. We're also looking at past history with the actual donor. So, if you in the past have considered a similar language written agreement to be unconditional, and now all of a sudden you're considering it conditional, we also might question that stance as well. So, we're looking at consistency. Consistency is also a key thing.
Right. Well, I guess to that point, why would an organization choose to maybe be inconsistent? What is it about the accounting treatment for a conditional contribution versus an unconditional that they may not want it to be conditional?
Well, I mean, I think most of the time when I see inconsistency, it doesn't really necessarily have to do with wanting to either record the support revenue or not. What it really boils down to is maybe there's a change in the accounting team, and so there's just a fresh set of eyes. There's a new person kind of reading through the agreement and coming to a different conclusion. Or perhaps there's a change in outsource team. We're moving from in-house to outsourcing. Or there's even a rationale where maybe development is kind of the one that's driving the revenue recognition as well. So I guess, yeah, to your point, maybe this is kind of fitting into that realm of a world where you were talking about why would they want to? Well, maybe development wants to get that credit for support revenue being raised and brought in, contributions being raised and brought in 1 year because they have a quota and a criteria to meet. Maybe it's an incentive or a bonus for somebody. So they want it recorded and they want it recorded now. So maybe they're driving and pushing that and pressurizing a little bit from that point too. I have seen that on a few instances. It's usually far and few between. Mostly it's just because of an inconsistency due to a change in accounting staff and a new conclusion being reached.
But that I think that's a very good point though, because I remember when I was working in more of the for-profit world in audits, that was always something that we assessed during probably planning. Like, are there any incentive structures that would cause the organization take a certain accounting position, like maybe defer the revenue for whatever reason or accrue certain expenses because of a certain tax position they want to take. So like understanding that and understanding maybe that that can maybe not as often, but it can exist in the nonprofit space, that could maybe be something to consider during the entire process.
Yeah, and going back to the very beginning of the conversation when you talked about how that particular grant agreement you were reading stated that it's unconditional for accounting purposes, there are a lot of grantors that actually provide that language for conditional revenue as well. So we see a lot of times that it will be maybe an award that is provided over 5 years. However, they will specifically stipulate that they're not tied to, and they have no legal obligation to provide any funding above and beyond that first round that they've already provided in cash until certain criteria have been met. So from that standpoint, that's pretty strong language that basically insinuates, hey, the grantor doesn't see this as unconditional. So we are going to take that conservative approach and also consider it to be conditional.
Yeah, right, exactly. So I guess going back a little bit to the idea of wording, for let's say you have a grant agreement where there is no such section of the agreement that specifically says this is conditional, this is not conditional. That's probably more common, right? You're not going to have it that easily laid out for you. You do need to look for explicit wording stipulating the right of return, though, right?
Yes, that is the first criteria for you to even consider if it's a conditional agreement or not. If that language does not exist, then it is unconditional because it's assumed that even if you don't meet the requirements, you don't have to return the funding. Just
Interesting.
vice versa, if you have a right of return, that does not necessarily mean that it is conditional.
Correct.
Again, going back to those barriers, do you have true barriers to overcome? So that is the first step to consider it to be conditional.
I see. So unlike maybe other parts of accounting or gap, there is no, it sounds like, real concept of implied right of return, right, in the context of contributions.
I'd almost agree with that.
So and in terms of the accounting, the major difference between something that is truly conditional versus unconditional is the one that's conditional, you're not recording the revenue. You have to record it as a deferred revenue. Or I think there's more formal language like a refundable advance. Is
Refundable advance.
that accurate?
Yeah, we typically would call it a refundable advance because, again, it's an advance on that support contribution that you may be recognizing in the future. Deferred revenue, we kind of tie that again to actual exchange transactions, contracts, customers with contract type of revenue. So we kind of differentiate that way, just like we differentiate accounts receivable versus grants or pledges or contributions receivable. We want to make sure that's appropriately disaggregated on the statement of financial position. So with that, again, that's also assuming that you've gotten the cash, right? So you obviously would not record a refundable advance if you don't receive the cash, because there are instances where a match is a perfect example of a conditional type of an agreement whereby, hey, if you raise $100,000, I'll give you $100,000. And maybe you don't have that cash yet. So you would raise $100,000, record a receivable at that point for that conditional revenue that you've now recognized in support contributions. So you, again, didn't have that cash, but you've got a receivable on the books once you've met that condition.
Okay, got it. And the revenue recognition process, let's say it's not the example of where there is the requirement for a matching contribution. It's maybe more, let's say, boilerplate where you have to serve X number of people or beneficiaries of your services. The revenue recognition under that example, let's say you did receive the cash, you have this refundable advance. As you serve the people that relate to your performance barriers, you would recognize theoretically that revenue ratably. So let's say you had to serve 100 people. Can you recognize half of your revenue when you've served 50? Or is generally the practice is serve all of the 100, then recognize all of the revenue?
Love this question. The answer, it depends.
Of course.
The reason why it depends is that it depends on how the agreement and the language is written, right? So if we go back to the easy kind of example with the match, right? If the grant agreement is raise $100,000, I'll give you $100,000, right? You don't recognize that $100,000 match until you've raised $100,000. You don't recognize it ratably. Whereas if it's written in a way where it says we will match dollar for dollar up to $100,000, then you would arguably recognize it as you raise those funds, right? So
Got
every
it.
dollar you raise, you get to record that conditional match.
Okay, perfect. So what about disclosure requirements, or like when you get around to actually the audited financial statements, are there any specific disclosure requirements or footnote requirements for specific conditional contributions or anything like that, or anything on the face of the financial statements that you'd see that relates to this concept?
There are. I mean, so again, on the face of the statement of financial position, again, we're going to call it a refundable advance if the cash has come in through the door and you haven't yet met the conditions of the grant or at least substantially met them. When it comes to the actual footnote disclosures, you would have your typical contribution type of disclosure, but included in that, we do disclose whether the organization has received funding that is deemed to be conditional. So again, the cash has come in the door. So we would disclose the amount of that and what's sitting in the refundable advance. Likewise, what's been awarded to the organization that perhaps they haven't received the funding for. What that does for the reader, that particular disclosure, is that it tells them, hey, yes, they don't have the cash in the door, but I know in the future they have about, let's say, $5 million that's going to be earned and is going to be recognized as revenue. So you can see a stronger position from that standpoint.
Okay. I'm curious also too, like in your experience, have you seen many instances where it was a conditional contribution, there was a refundable advance recorded, but the performance barriers were never met and thus the funds weren't returned? Like, just curious, how often does that actually happen?
It doesn't happen that often, but it does happen.
Okay.
So sometimes too, it will even happen in instances even with unconditional revenues, unfortunately, where you will see a deobligation of funds. I mean, let's go back to everything that's happening right now with the change of the administration when we're talking about rescission or terminations of government grants, that federal fund, those are actually considered to be conditional contributions. They are purpose restricted for whatever program they're related to, but then the conditions relate to the fact that they have to be spent in accordance with the cost principles under uniform guidance, right? And so that's the condition that has to be met. You have to incur the cost based on that cost principle in order to recognize that revenue. So much like with what we're seeing in today, those conditional awards, maybe they existed as of December 31st, 2024, in all of our financial statements that we're currently going through in this process. But obviously, subsequent to year end, we're now also disclosing that some of those conditional awards that were awarded but not yet recognized as revenue have now since been terminated or rescinded.
Okay. Interesting. Anything else you can think of that would be good for people to know about conditional contribution that you've seen in auditing them?
I don't think there's necessarily anything else, but involve your auditors if you have any kind of inclination or gray area. That is what I always tell my clients. We are here for resources. We don't like surprises when it comes to the audit process. Much like my clients wouldn't like an audit adjustment if we come to a separate conclusion on the type of agreement and how it should be recognized. So I would say involve your auditors, make sure that you are bouncing your proposed resolution or revenue recognition method based on those agreements with them if there is some subjectivity related to it. Obviously, some of them are very straightforward. I'm not saying involve them in every single grant agreement you recognize, but the material ones and the ones where there's that subjectivity where you're kind of, well, I feel like it could go either way. That's the time and frame that we would love to have just a quick email, shoot off the grant agreement. What are your thoughts? Here's where we landed. Do you agree? Quick and easy 5-minute conversation. It also helps us during the audit process because I've already got one grant agreement I likely might test. So we're all on the same page moving forward too.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. That's something that I didn't really start doing until probably a few years ago, but it saved a ton of time and, quite frankly, a lot of potentially like slightly awkward conversations during the audit, right? Like, why go through all of that when all of us want from both sides the same thing? You all want a smooth audit, the client wants a smooth audit as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
Perfect. Okay. Well, I think if memory serves me right, we also recorded a video about the distinction between restricted versus unrestricted revenue. So definitely check that out because this does feed into that, right? Like you can have conditional and then you still have to make the determination between rev or restricted versus unrestricted. So both of those go hand in hand. So this is more for the audience. Okay.
Exactly. And coming down the pipeline, if you all are a part of our newsletters that we get from our practice, we talked about focusing on the fundamentals for May. So Yev and I will also be recording a short little brief podcast that just talks about what does that mean and what do we think we need to get back to when it comes to the fundamentals of being a nonprofit.
Exactly. That's perfect. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, as always, Trisha.
Thanks, Yev.
All right. Talk to you later.